Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Steve Alm. I'm a judge from Honolulu, Hawaii. I think it's absolute coincidence that the two places Marlene approved for this are Florida and Hawaii. Okay. I was a career prosecutor. I was a United States attorney from 94 to 2001. I have to say, Laurie Robinson's words rang really true about going with the science, going with what works, and that's why I got it started in this. I was appointed to the Circuit Court bench in 2001, and I got assigned to the current assignment, felony jury trial judge, regular case of, calendar of felonies from arraignment, and we do all the pretrial matters, motions to suppress and the like. You know, it's murders, rapes, robberies, theft. Hawaii has one of the lowest violent crime rates in the country. It has one of the highest property crime rates. We're all in the top, like, three or four. And methamphetamine has been the drug of choice for 20 years. I think our situation is probably very similar to you folks in your own jurisdictions. We have 8,000 plus offenders on felony probation or deferral on Oahu, which is where Honolulu is, the main 85% of the population in Hawaii. Probation officers have these huge caseloads. Most 80% of the cases involve drugs. Crystal meth for 20 years has been our biggest drug issue. And I would get motions to revoke probation from the day I started on that calendar with often two or three pages of violations going back, 6 months, a year, 2 years, 3 years, missed appointments, dirty UAs, not going to treatment, refuses to go to treatment, often ending with a person absconding, you know. And I realized the probation officers, like the judges, thought they had a choice between two. If people are doing great on probation, that's fine, but many don't. And then the probation officer thought their only choice were they try to work with a person, talk to them, threaten them, cajole them, and tell them, if you keep this up, if you keep testing dirty or missing appointments or not going to treatment, next year you're going to go back to court and the judge might send you to prison for 5 or 10 years. Well, that kind of thinking barely works with us. It certainly doesn't work with the people we're working with. Next year they could win a lottery, they could get hit by a bus. Their uncle could die and leave him money. It's meaningless, that kind of way down the road thing. And who knows, maybe years ago a probation officer actually filed a motion to revoke probation with two violations on it. And the judge said, I'm not going to send somebody to prison for 5 or 10 years based on one dirty UA and a missed appointment. So I sat down and I thought, what will work? What can I do? What can we do to change offender behavior? And I looked at the statutes, but mostly just thinking. And then I thought, okay, what do I do as a father? If my kid screws up, I sanction him right away. I don't send him to jail, but I do sanction him. Take away privileges, he can get grounded, whatever it is. He was a little young to get grounded at that point. But you talk to him and you give him a swift and certain consequence. That way, he'll tie in whatever he did wrong with the consequence. And so I thought, okay, how do we go about doing that in probation? Well, I got together with one of the senior probation officers who's creative and willing to try looking at an old system a new way. I then brought in a supervisor at the prosecutor's office, the public defender. We talked for a while. I told the prosecutor, we've got to make this labor non-intensive, or the probation officers will never want to do it. They've been doing LSIR training, motivational interview training, and here's this judge coming with another new idea to try, right? So I asked the deputy prosecutor, supervisor, he came up with a 3-page combined motion to modify probation, because I said it should be a modification. Then court staff doesn't have to do a new judgment. They do an order that is very quick, takes 2 minutes to do, because again, court staff, with judge leadership, if we care about it, the staff will care about it. But it's got to be quick and easy to do. The public defender said, Judge, now you're talking about enforcing all of the rules on probation, because that's what we're doing. We're deconstructing the motion to revoke and going back to the first violation. We're going to arrest them as soon as possible and have a hearing a couple of days later. They're held in custody in between, and they get a short stint in jail. That is the basic core of this. Now, how to make that whole system work was the challenge. As a U.S. attorney, working with Marlene Beckman, working with the folks at Justice Department, we set up a number of weed and seed sites. We set up a weed and seed court in state district court. So I was thinking along the lines of a swift and certain consequence anyway. We looked at drug courts and thought, is there any parts of that that could be useful? Because we had a drug court at the time. It had between 50 and 100 people, dedicated judge. to do this, but I was a full-time trial court judge. So what could we take from them that would make this work as well? And so it really is this collaborative strategy. It's bringing everybody together, and this is one of the hardest points. That's why what I handed out to you folks is a series of benchmarks we've come up with, that if any place is thinking about doing this, I will be happy to talk to the judges involved, especially on why they're going to have to think differently to do this. There are 8 or 10 states that are looking at setting up pilots right now. But if you don't have all these steps, when you read through those steps, you realize this is not an easy thing to do. You have to get everybody organized. But the idea is if you can set up swift and certain consequences, you can change behavior of the offenders. And the idea, this isn't a magic potion or anything. It's a tool to make probation work the way it ought to work, and probably the way some of the public thinks it works right now, right? Oh, if they test dirty, they must get arrested, right? Or they must get locked up for it. The idea is if we can keep offenders drug-free, seeing their probation officer, and going to treatment, whatever the treatment may be, then they have a real chance to succeed on probation. Because the probation officers can be trained up, and ours are very well trained, motivational interviewing, COG skills. But unless the offender is sitting in the seat and not high, they're not going to get the benefit of that. We targeted the highest risk people, and that is one of the differences with drug court. They won't take the violent guys, sex offenders. The prosecutors have a veto pretrial, which is why we don't have as many people as we should in our drug court. We're after the ones that have the most problems on probation. Violent, whatever. The judge, if the people are violent or dangerous at sentencing, the judge should send them to prison. If they're going to be on probation, then we should try to get the hardest folks in here, the most troublesome folks. We based on the public defender's request, we actually started this with a warning hearing. So we bring the offenders to court, and I tell them, because you're not in prison and you're on probation, you're making a deal with me that you're going to follow all the rules of probation. If you don't want to do that, tell me now and I'll send you to prison. Because from now on, you're going to have to follow all of the rules of probation. The probation officer is my eyes and ears out there. Whatever he or she says, you have to follow or you're going to go to jail. If you don't see your probation officer, you know, what I know is you know you're going to test dirty. That's why you're not going. Or you're doing something you shouldn't do, or you're blowing off the probation officer and me. Any three of those, you're going to go to jail. If you come in and test dirty, you're going to get arrested on the spot, and we'll have a hearing a couple of days later. So that's how we set this whole thing up, is to have swift and certain consequences. Now, we have them call a drug test hotline. Let's see if I can call it. And
this Monday, the 15th, 2009. Thank you for calling the Hope Hotline. Please listen carefully to the entire message for any new instructions. Today's callers will be at the end of this message. All clients scheduled for UAs today will report to the Adult Client Services Office at 777 Punchbowl Street.
Courthouse.
As a reminder, please bring a picture ID. At the reception desk, please sign another Hope sign-in sheet. Sit on the bench in the hallway outside of the lobby and wait to be called. You are instructed to report and submit a sample between the hours of 7:45 a.m. and no later than 2 p.m. Please note that you will be subject to an arrest if you are unable to provide the sample by 2 p.m.
So they don't come at quarter two and
once
say,
again,
I can't
you will
pee.
Be subject to an arrest if you are unable to provide the sample by 2 p.m. Finally, UAs scheduled for today are for blue 1 and orange 2. Again, UAs scheduled for today are for blue 1 and orange 2. Thank you and have a great day.
You have to be positive. When they start, their colors will come up at least once a week, sometimes 2 days in a row, 6 times a month. If they show up all the time and test clean, they're given a new color after 2 months that's half as often, then half as often again as a reward for being sober and following through with it. Anybody wants to go to treatment can go to treatment. On the other hand, if they can stop using drugs on their own, and some can, it's a myth that people, whether it's methamphetamine or anything else, are all addicts. And that's one of the beauties of this program is the ones that don't need to go to treatment don't go. Then the ones who do go and take the precious treatment resources really need it. Now, we started with 34 people on October 1st of 2004. I did a warning hearing, 18 sex offenders at 8:30, 16 drug offenders convicted of a variety of felonies but failing at probation, headed for revocation. And I told them what all this warning hearing was about. And so from now on at warning hearings, I have a wanted poster, and I say, if you don't show up for a probation appointment or you don't show up for a drug test, the Fugitive Task Force, because due to my law enforcement background, I was able to get the HIDA that we started, and the U.S. Marshal with the Fugitive Task Force serving the warrants for my court. So I say, you've seen these posters at post offices and elsewhere. These guys who make these arrests are going to come and arrest you. They're not going to come alone. People can get hurt. It's embarrassing. So even if you screwed up, you got high or you missed an appointment, come in anyway, because you will get sanctioned, but not for as long as if we have to use their resources to hunt you down. Because the more responsible you are on probation, the more freedom you're going to have, and the less I'm going to sanction you. Now, I had a contest among the probation officers to come up with a name for this program. One of the early entries was Yank and Spank. And I thought, you know, it's pretty accurate, but it's not aspirational enough. So when the nomination for Hawaii's Opportunity Probation with Enforcement came in, I thought, yes, we have a good name. If you have a good program, you got to have a good name. And we're not, you know, I'm not kidding myself. This is not a be-all and end-all. The short-term goal is to make these folks more, and I say guys more, it's 90% men, 10% women. These are observed urine tests, so you got to have testers for both. The idea is to keep them sober, seeing their PO, going to whatever treatment, and then in the long term, they have a chance of changing their thinking, which is what you need to do to change behavior. That's absolutely critical. Now, some of these folks have been in prison before. Some of them have been in jail. Virtually all have been in jail before. And the thing is, when people at first told us, you know, some of these guys have done time. I don't think this is going to work. And I think, you know, but human nature being what it is, people can do time when they have to, but they don't want to do it today. You know, it's the disruptive nature of it that works. I use today, I might get tested tomorrow and go to jail tomorrow. I don't want to go to jail tomorrow, so I'm not going to use today. You can string together days of that. They can go to their treatment programs if they have that. They can go to AANA meetings. They can do whatever it takes. Because we tell them at the warning hearing, we want everyone here to succeed. And now I'm doing them one at a time, or I'm doing them at sentencing when we put people in hope. We want you to succeed. Your public defender does, the prosecutor does, the taxpayers in Hawaii do. It costs $50,000 a year to lock people up in prison in Hawaii. It's $27,000 a year in Arizona, which is why we're sending 2,000 inmates to Arizona, disrupting their families, you know, causing them real problems that way. Ongoing developments. We have 6 felony judges doing this now, 3 misdemeanor felon circuit court judges have been doing misdemeanor domestic violence cases. Because a year into this, we started with the DV felons. And I said to the DV folks, give us the 30 guys that are having the most problems on probation. Out of the list of 30, 20 were on bench warrant status. I guess that's not a big surprise. I gave the list of 20 to the Fugitive Task Force and said, you know, try to go arrest these guys. The other 10, I did a warning hearing with the 10, all young, all male, all violent, couple had attitudes in court. Well, they behaved just like everybody else. They started seeing their PO. They started going to the domestic violence batterers classes. If they had substance use issues, they started testing cleaner. It doesn't seem to matter who that is. And it's the same results with all of the judges, because it may come as a shock to you, but not all of my colleagues are quite as enthusiastic about buying into this program as I am. And judges, you know, this expression about herding cats, I used to think that was cute when I'd hear it at other conferences. Well, I don't think it's cute anymore. Trying to, you know, judges are used to having total discretion over things, you know, doing it the way they've always done it, and nobody can tell them what to do. So this was a challenge. Most of the judges are totally on board with this because they see the results. We started with 34 people. Now, 4.5 years later, we have over 1,475 in this, including 1,250 felons. It's a moving target because every week we have folks finishing probation. It's all 5 years in Hawaii. And we have new people starting every week. I personally am supervising 600 offenders on this in addition to my regular felony load. The only reason this works is number 4, virtually no hearings are contested. And I think there are 2 reasons for that. One, we're not going to throw the book at them. They know that. Second, we're talking about what happened 2 or 3 days ago or last week, not what happened a year ago. So we come into court. I say, Ms. So-and-so, the public defender, what does your client want to do? He wants to admit to it. Okay, Mr. So-and-so, you have a right to have a hearing. Prosecutor bring a witness. The probation officer, they try to prove you violated a condition of your probation. If not, you can admit to it. You did it. That's fine. And then I ask the prosecutor, your recommendation, public defender, yours. and then I talk to the defendant, and then I give them whatever I'm going to give them. The prosecutor gives me probation officer sends an email with their recommendation attached to a template that has the whole history of the case. Then they just have to update it. When the person was on probation, any prior modifications, what the consequences were, what the current violation was, what the probation plan is, and the like. So typical sentences, first-time violations might be credit for time served. We try to do these 2 business days later. So as you know, in the jail world, that's 3 days, right? Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. In the rest of the world, that's 48 hours. But that's often what we'll do. Some of the time, we'll make them go through the weekend because it kind of doesn't hurt they miss whatever they had planned this weekend. Because I told them at the warning hearing, you may have a big event coming up, your kid's first Pop Warner football game. Well, if you get high on ice during the week, you're going to miss that. And that means you chose the ice pipe over your kid's football game. So don't kid around. You're an adult. I'm an adult. I can't control what you're going to do, but I can control what I'm going to do. So if you do this, this is going to happen. And I go through it. We have one of our drug testers. We went to the legislature 4 years ago and got $1.2 million because we already had stats that the Attorney General's office kept. Later on, we're getting top-of-the-line research with Dr. Angela Hawken from Pepperdine, and she'll be coming up after me. But from the beginning, we had these really great numbers of reduced drug use, increased missed appointments. And part of the money, $770,000 of that $1.2 million, are for drug treatment slots. We're big believers in treatment, but it should be for the folks that really need it. And treatment works, but it works even better if the person in treatment know they're going to get arrested if they walk out the door. One of our drug testers, and three of the positions of the $1.2 million are $25,000 a year clerks. They do all the drug testing now. So that woman you heard on the phone and two of her male colleagues do all of the observed urine tests. We have same-day hearings. If somebody has a paycheck job, at least for the first time, we take him into custody. If he says, you know, I got a full-time job I got to get to, we take him into custody, bring him to court. Within a couple of hours, we get the attorneys there. He'll admit to it, and I'll give him a weekend or two in jail. But I'll tell him, don't count on this the next time, because you could be a hazard to other people at work if you're loaded. Maybe allow passes for people to go to a treatment program to get assessed if they seem to have trouble making it in the front door to get assessed. That means a responsible adult will pick them up at jail, take them to the assessment, take them back to jail. We come back to court a week or two later. Friends of Hope is a nonprofit looking at the drug court. They've got a number of them have nonprofits. They're going to provide child care for anybody in Hope who needs to go to job training or job interviews and doesn't have family to watch their kids. They're going to pay for dental work for anybody who needs it. I would strongly suggest, we don't have time for it now, but if you want to talk to me, the cutoff level for drug testing, there's a federal workplace safety guideline level, that is too high. And it has, who cares if they pass a federal workplace safety guideline level? That's 500 nanograms per milliliter for methamphetamine. The labs with a GCMS can accurately test it down to 125. That's what you should be using. So I would ask about it and follow through with it. I got no extra staff to start. We got no extra money. We did it for a year without any extra dollars. And we had these great results. So it should get started small as well. Anybody contemplating it, on the benchmarks you say under 100, I'd suggest 50. Get all the moving parts together. And once you start seeing good results, which I'm confident you will, you can expand it then. We have no due process issues because you have counsel, prosecutor, public defender, private counsel, in court, on the record. They're waiving the hearings, and that's why we're doing it. I'm going to turn it over to Angela Hawken. Thank you.